Thanks, Brooke, and thank you to the committee for letting me have the opportunity to do this. Thank you for asking, and it's been really it's been fun, and it's really super fun tonight to see some old friends. And Mr. Curtis is on tonight, and I see Deborah and Brian, and it's nice to see you guys. Anyways, so I am, my name's Carrie. I'm a recovered alcoholic. My home group is the New Horizons Group in beautiful Bend, Oregon, and I'm currently living in the disciplines of steps 10, 11, and 12. And we are going through the big book, right? Just as I would be taking someone who's new going through the steps. And so where we are right now tonight is on page 67. I almost got done with resentments last week, this close. And so we're going to finish up resentments and hopefully tonight move on through fear, sex, and harms done. So that's the goal. Let's see how it goes. So page 67, we're done with the sick man prayer. That is a prayer that shows, that helps me to pray to God to help me, not the other person. And my highlights on that, just to reiterate from last week, is we ask God to help us show them the same tolerance, pity, and patience. And then the last line of that prayer is, God save me from being angry. So I'm praying to God to help me, not praying for the other person. And that's what this is telling me. Because if I was praying for the other person, then I'd be telling God what to do. And I, the last chapter told me that I have to stop playing God. And I need to just entirely get done with trying to run the show. And so I'm going to let God do his job, and I'm going to ask him to help me to do my job, which is to have patience, kindliness, and tolerance. So let's see, referring to the list again, our hit list. I don't think I did this paragraph last week, putting out of the minds that the wrongs others have done, right? And that's why we don't say part, or that's why the big book doesn't say part. Because if this was the whole situation, and I say, well, I'm just going to look at my part in this, right? That's assuming that the other person has a part. And even if my part was 95% or 5% and the other person had 95%, then I'm still looking at that 95%. And so putting out of the minds the wrongs others have done, this is 100% my wrongs. And so I don't have a part in 100% what I've done wrong. And so I have to look at the wording. Again, I'm a big book literalist, so I'm going to look at the wording very carefully. So it says, putting out of our minds what the wrongs others have done, we resolutely looked for our own mistakes. And this, no matter how small it is 100% my mistake. And that's all I'm looking at. Where had we been selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, and frightened? Though the situation hadn't been entirely our fault, we tried to disregard the other person involved entirely. So I'm not going to look at that. Where were we to blame? This is all I get to look at, this little piece here. The inventory was ours, not the other man's. I know that this seems like a little bit like reiterated and repeated. I think it's for a reason, right? I think they're trying to get something through my thick head that I'm not supposed to be looking at the other man's part. I'm not supposed to be looking at what you did to me. At this point, it's about where my faults were. So another highlight is when we saw our faults, we listed them. We placed them before us in black and white. We admitted the wrongs, our wrongs, again, our wrongs, our mistakes, it says, our harms done. We admitted our wrongs honestly, and we're willing to set these matters straight. Notice, so now we're finally on fears. Okay, so notice the word fear is bracketed along the difficulties with Mr. Brown, Mrs. Jones, and the employer and the wife, which we already went through last week. This short word somehow touches about every aspect of our lives. It's an evil and corroding, it was an evil and corroding thread. The fabric of our existence was shot through with it. It set into motions trains of circumstances circumstances which brought us misfortune, which we felt we didn't deserve. But did we not ourselves set the ball rolling? Sometimes we think fear ought to be classified with stealing. It seems to cause more trouble. So we reviewed our fears thoroughly. We put them on paper, even though we had no resentment in connection with them. So let's stop there. My first time through, and if your sponsor does it different, you know, I just want to reiterate through this whole workshop. If your sponsor says something that is different from what I'm saying, they're right. I'm wrong, right? We ask someone to sponsor us because we want what they have. And there's no wrong way to do this other than not doing it. The way that I understand this, the way that I do it, the way that I help the women that I sponsor to do it is, very literally, right? And so it says we ask, so we reviewed our fears thoroughly. We put them on paper, even though the ones that we had no connection with, no resentment in connection. So it would be easy to just say, let's make one list, right? All of the resentments, our hit list, if you will. But the way that I read this, the way that we go through this, the way that it talks now about fear and then about sex and then about harms done is that there's going to be some other things that maybe I need to look at other than the people who I had resentments for. So toward. And so a lot of the stuff that I feared came out in my resentment list, right? A lot of the stuff. But maybe not all of it. So I'm going to list my fears, even the ones that had no resentment in connection, right? So that's why I'm going to make another list of fears, because it's like a catch-all. Obviously, that first list, my resentment list, is going to be the biggest. Then I'm going to have a fears list. Then I'm going to have a sex list. And it's when we get there, I'll explain. It's not sexual intercourse. It's interaction, right? So, and we'll get there. And then a harms done list. And the reason why I have been shown four different lists and this thorough of an inventory is because when I first went through this work with my first sponsor, one of the people that I really did owe an amends to that I needed to inventory. And I don't know about you guys, but I was an asshole, and not just when I was drinking. I mean, I just was. And a lot of the things that I did was not because you stepped on my toes, was not because I feared you, was not because I was manipulating you with sex. It was just because who I was. And so I'll give you an example. There was a boy that I grew up with that I don't know why this is still uncomfortable for me to talk about. And I only talk about it during this place in the book. The boy, Corey Mowen, he had cerebral palsy, and he didn't make my first fourth step. And I always wondered why, right? And then my sponsor I have today, she helped me to figure out. So Corey Mowen was a boy that we made fun of, and we did very mean things too. And, you know, I could easily say, well, there was nothing else to do in the little town that I grew up in, right? There was, anyways, we were awful to Corey. We did extremely cruel things, and I won't go into those things, but, he didn't show up on my resentment list because I wasn't resentful toward him. He didn't show up when I inventoried my fears because I wasn't fearful of him. He didn't show up under sex because I never, you know, I never did anything sexual with him. So he fell through, right? And so I think that these other lists are for catch-alls, because I definitely needed to make amends to this boy. I definitely needed to clean up some harms that I caused. And so that's why there's going to be four lists. And I'm still uncomfortable talking about that situation, even, and it's been years, you know, I was 14, but it was definitely something that needed to be inventoried, even though it would have slipped through all these cracks. So when we asked ourselves why we had them, we're talking about the fears that have no resentment in connection with them. So now I get to, now a lot of those fears are going to be caught in inventory, in the resentful inventory, a lot of them, not all of them. So now I'm going to list the ones that had no connection. I'm going to ask why we had them. Wasn't it because self-reliance failed us? Self-reliance was good as far as it went, but it didn't go far enough. Some of us once had great self-confidence, but it didn't fully solve the fear problem or any other. When it made us cocky, it was worse. Perhaps there's a better way. We think so. For we are now on a different basis, the basis of trusting and relying upon God. We trust infinite God rather than our finite self. And that's a really good words to look up, right? Infinite and finite. So infinite means infinity, right? Like limitless. Finite means there's a limit to what I can do. Finite means I'm only human. I can only do so much. I can't fly. I can't make the trees grow or the ocean roar, right? Like I am finite. So now I have to trust an infinite God to do for me what I can't do for myself. So we are in the world to play the role he assigns, just to the extent as we do as we think he would have us and humbly rely on him, does he enable us to match calamity with serenity? So let's read that again, literally. So what it could have said, and it doesn't, and this is what I heard for a long time, is just to the extent that we do what he would have us, but it doesn't. And it's because I am not expected to be all-knowing. It says, just to the extent we do as we think he would have us do. This leaves room for me to be human, for me to make mistakes, for me to pray and ask God, what would you have me be? What would you have me do? And as long as I'm doing what I think God would have me do and humbly rely on him, then he allows, well, I'm just going to read, to the extent that we would have, he would have us, and humbly rely on him, does he enable us to match calamity with serenity? And so the visual that I have there is Alcoholics Anonymous in this process, it's not going to take away the storm, right? It's not going to take away the fact that the world and all of its people are often quite wrong, but it's going to change me inwardly to where I can walk through that storm with an umbrella, right? I can walk through that storm unharmed. I can walk through that storm with grace. And so AA doesn't change the people, places, and things around me. AA changes my reaction to the people, places, and things around me. And just to the extent that I humbly rely on him. And that's the key. We never apologize to anyone for depending on our creator. We can laugh at those who think that spirituality is the way of weakness. Paradoxically, which is very common in AA, we have so many paradoxes, it is the way of strength. The verdict of the ages is that faith means courage. Oh, wait a minute. All men of faith have courage? Why would they need courage if they don't have any fear? I thought, because I've heard in lots of AA meetings, that you can't have fear and faith at the same time. That's not what it says here. My sponsor says that, of course, we can have fear and faith at the same time, or else we wouldn't need courage, right? If I didn't have fear, if I was perfect freedom from fear all the time, then why would I need courage? And it's my faith that I have in my higher power that grants me that courage to where I can walk through. So all men of faith have courage. They wouldn't need courage if they didn't have, if they didn't have fear. If faith meant no freedom from fear, then they wouldn't need courage. They trust their God. We never apologize for God. Instead, we let him demonstrate through us what he can do. We ask him to remove our fear and direct our attention to what he would have us be. At once, we commence to outgrow fear. So every time in my 10th step, right, during the day when I'm doing my walking around step and I'm looking for character defects and they crop up, whether it's fear, resentment, whatever the case may be, and we'll use fear because we're on the fear, I ask God at once to remove fear, right? Like as soon as that crops up, I say, God, please remove that fear and direct me to where what you would have me be, right? It does not say at once our fear vanishes never to return. It says at once we commence, which means we begin to outgrow fear, not that the fear vanishes like that. So the more I pray, the more I practice this prayer, the more I practice this principle, the less my fear controls my life. And the less the fear, the less the fear crops up in my experience. And now about sex. So many of us needed an overhaul here. But above all, we tried to be sensible on this question. So it was so easy to get way off track. Here we find human opinions running to extremes, absurd extremes, perhaps. One set of voices cry that sex is a lust of our lower nature, a base necessity for procreation. Then we have the voices on the other side of the spectrum, right, who cry for sex, sex, and more sex, who bewail the institution of marriage, who think that most of the troubles of the race are traceable to sex causes. They think we do not have enough of it or that it isn't the right kind. They see its significance everywhere. So basically what this is saying is that people have two different extremes. And so what it's going to start reiterating and reiterating here is, as a sponsor, I'm not the arbiter of anyone's sex conduct. I don't get to play God where that's concerned. So one school would allow man no flavor for his fare, and the other would have us all on a straight pepper diet. We want to stay out of this controversy. So this is some direction for the sponsor. It says, we do not want to be the arbiter of anyone's sex conduct. We all have sex problems. We'd hardly be human if we didn't. What can we do about them? Well, I love this inventory so much. We reviewed our own conduct over the years past. Where had we been selfish, dishonest, or inconsiderate? Whom had we hurt? Did we unjustifiably arouse jealousy, suspicion, or bitterness? Where were we at fault? What should we have done instead? We got all this down on paper and looked at it. In this way, we tried to shape a sane and sound ideal for our future sex life. Now, I know that when I was new, I heard a lot of things like, you know, you don't date for the first year, you keep your legs closed for 90 days, or, you know, all this stuff. And I always used to wonder, well, where is it in the book? And I could never find it. And the only place that I've been able to find that gives any sort of time frame is this one little line right here. And I just have my highlight is just the word future, right? So I don't care how long you have sober, whether it's 90 days or a year or 10 years, but it kind of indicates that we're doing this inventory to shape a sane and sound ideal for our future sex life. So when I'm working with a newer person and they're not dating yet, I might, you know, suggest they hold off until they've done a fourth step, whether that takes them 4 weeks, 4 days, or 4 years. It could also be a little bit of motivation. I don't know. But I don't see a time frame in here. I do see the word future though. And so how am I going to know what I even have to offer someone until I've taken inventory of that? So that's why when I'm working with someone new, it doesn't matter about the time frame as much as have you taken a sexual inventory? Have you done your fourth step yet? And that's what I usually will suggest to newer people that I'm working with. We subjected each relation to this test. Was it selfish or not? We asked God to mold our ideals and help us to live up to them. That's another ask, right? So it's a prayer. I have that prayer highlighted because every time the book says ask, I have a little box around the word ask. And then it reminds me that of that being the prayer. We remembered always that our sex powers were God-given and therefore good, neither to be used lightly or selfishly, nor to be despised or loathed. Whatever our ideal turns out to be, we must be willing to grow toward it. We must be willing to make amends where we've done harm, provided that we do not bring about still more harm in so doing. In other words, we treat sex like we would treat any other problem in meditation. We ask God what we should do about each specific matter. Notice how it doesn't say your sponsor. The right answers will come if we want it. Now, just in case we haven't caught on yet, just in case we still don't understand that we're not supposed to be the arbiter of anybody's sex conduct, this next line will bring it home. God alone can judge our sex situation. Counsel with persons is often desirable. So please talk to your sponsor. Let your sponsor direct you to page 69 because that's where you're directed to when you come to your sponsor with sex problems. But we let God be the final judge. I'm at the top of page 70. We realize that some people are as fanatical about sex as others are loose. We avoid hysterical thinking or advice. So I don't know how many times they just said that in three paragraphs. But it was a lot. So I think that's an important thing to point out. Suppose we fall short of the chosen ideal and we stumble. Does this mean that we're going to get drunk? Some people tell us so, right? That's why they say don't date in the first year or whatever. But this is only half the truth. That's what the book says. It depends on us and our motives. If we are sorry for what we've done, and we have the honest desire to let God take us to better things, we believe we will be forgiven and we'll have learned our lesson. So, one of the things that I've learned in my years sponsoring, when I used to set down a bunch of rules, because I did, I was one of those sponsors who, you go to 90 meetings in 90 days, you don't date for a year, you blah, 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 blah. But what I'm doing is I'm taking away someone else's experience. What I was doing was I was enabling someone else to have some real life experience that they might need so that they can help somebody else. It carries and it holds a lot more depth and weight when you can share with your sponsee, when one of the women that I sponsor can share with their sponsees, this is my experience. This is what I did, and this was the outcome. Instead of, oh no, I didn't date in my first year because Carrie said not to. I mean, that doesn't hold as much. I'm taking away someone else's ability, or maybe possibly their experience, so that they can benefit others. The experience that they shouldn't be regretting, so that they can maybe benefit others. So it says that you don't necessarily have to drink. If you understand that you made a mistake and you have to go through that pain, it says we believe that we will be forgiven and we'll have learned our lesson. Now, on the other hand, if we are not sorry about our conduct, and our conduct continues to harm others, we are quite sure to drink. We are not theorizing. These are facts out of our experience. So all I have is my own experience, strength, and hope, right? And when I get somebody who is coming to me. Actually, there's one of the women that I sponsor is in this room right now. And she just came to me last week with something that I didn't have experience with, but I know who does, right? And so I can give phone numbers. I can give, and that's so cool to be able to, because I can't help everybody. I'm not all things to all people, but I can help them to find the right person who has had that experience, right? Because I don't give advice. I share experience. So to sum up about sex, we earnestly pray for the right ideal, for guidance in each questionable situation, for sanity, and for the strength to do the right thing. If sex is very troublesome, we throw ourselves the harder into helping others. Ugh. What pattern is that? I mean, that's what this book says over and over and over again. It's like, whenever there's a problem, oh, help somebody, right? We resolutely turn our thoughts to someone we can help. Resolutely means to resolve the situation. And it helps when nothing else will. We think of their needs and work for them. This takes us out of ourselves. It quiets the imperious urge when to yield would mean heartache. So if we've been thorough about our personal inventory, we've written down a lot. We've listed and analyzed our resentments. We've begun to comprehend their futility and their fatality. We have commenced to see their terrible destructiveness. We've begun to learn tolerance, patience, and goodwill toward all men. That comes from Bill's story, right? The last line of Bill's story in chapter one, that's the last line. I love it. It just reminds me of this holiday season every time I hear it. Goodwill toward all men. Even our enemies, for we look on them as sick people. Page 67, right? We went on the sick friend prayer. And here we go. We have listed the people we've hurt by our conduct. So there's our harms done list. So we also list the people that we've hurt, because that's our launching pad into step eight when we get there is the fourth step. That's why please don't burn your fourth step. If you're on your fourth step for the first time and you're working on it and then you read it to your sponsor, please don't burn it, because you're going to need it for your eighth step, right? And your ninth step. So we have listed the people we've hurt by our conduct, and we're willing to straighten out the past if we can. In this book, you read again and again that faith did for us what we could not do for ourselves. We hope you are convinced now that God can remove whatever self-will has blocked you off from him. If you have already made a decision, that's the third step, right? And an inventory of your grosser handicaps, that's the fourth step, right? You have made a good beginning. That being so, you have swallowed and digested some big chunks of truth about yourself. So now we get into action. Chapter 6, page 72. Having made our personal inventory, fourth step, what shall we do about it? Well, we've been trying to get a new attitude, a new relationship with our Creator to discover the obstacles in our path. We have admitted certain defects. We've ascertained in a rough way what the trouble is. We've put our finger on the weak items in our personal inventory. Now, these are about to be cast out. This requires action on our part. When completed, ED, will mean that we have admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our defects. This brings us to the fifth step. And how do we know we're on the fifth step now? Squiggly lines. It says the fifth step in italics in the program of recovery mentioned in the preceding chapter. So this is perhaps difficult, especially discussing our defects with another person. We think we've done well enough admitting these things to ourselves. There's doubt about that. So in actual practice, we usually find a solitary self-appraisal insufficient. Many of us thought it necessary to go much further. We will be more reconciled to discussing ourselves with another person when we see good reasons why we should do so, the best reason first. Now, these are the fifth step threats, or if you prefer warnings. I was taught that there are the fifth step threats. the best reason first. If we skip this vital step, we may not overcome drinking. Now, I have overcome drinking. That's why I don't need to do fifth steps anymore. Now, that sounded like a joke, but I've taken steps 1 through 9. I've overcome drinking. The principle of the fifth step is something that I have to practice in my 10th step, but I don't have to do a fifth step every day with my sponsor. That would, like, who's got time for that? Like, they say that a fifth step is when you hear someone else tells you their whole life story. Ugh, like, my sponsor would not want me to tell her my whole life story every single day. So I can practice the principle of the fifth step when I'm working in my maintenance steps. So if we skip this vital step, we may not overcome drinking. Time after time, newcomers have tried to keep to themselves certain facts about their lives. Trying to avoid this humbling experience, they turn to easier, softer methods. What's an easier, softer method? Self-help books? Well, what are some that I've tried other than self-help books? Oh, I used to sleep with an amethyst under my pillow, because amethysts ward away liquor. Oh, essential oils, for sure. Exercise. You know, everything that it says on page 31, where it goes down, you know, switching from scotch to liquor or beer, whatever, like all that stuff, those, I think, are the easier, softer methods that, quite frankly, I was willing to try. Any of those things, you know, like gratitude lists, God boxes, like I've tried it all before I finally started working the program of Alcoholics Anonymous outlined in the program of action, which is what we're into action, right? So what happens when it says trying to avoid this humbling experience, they've turned to easier methods. What happens? Almost invariably, they got drunk. So having persevered with the rest of the program, they wondered why they fell. We think the reason is that they never completed ED, their house cleaning. They took inventory all right, but hung on to some of the worst items in stock. They only thought they had lost their egotism and fear. They only thought they had humbled themselves, but they had not learned enough about humility, fearlessness, and honesty in the sense that we find it necessary until they told someone else all their life story. I've had to do this twice, the fifth step, because I've had two sponsors. One of the reasons that I did it again with the sponsor I have now, and I've been with her for about 12 years, is so that she can be that trusted friend who I can call when I'm having 10th step stuff crop up, right? Because if she's heard all my life story, if she's heard my entire inventory, then she's going to be able to say things like, oh, this is new for you, Carrie, or, oh, not this again. We've been through this, right? Like, she's going to know when, how to help me and how to direct me and what angle to hold that mirror up when I need her to hold the mirror up, which is now her only job, right? Holding the mirror up and pointing at God that way, right? So more than most people, the alcoholic leads a double life. No, he's much the actor. To the outer world, he presents his stage character. This is the one he likes his fellows to see. He wants to enjoy certain reputation, but knows in his heart he doesn't deserve it. The inconsistency is made worse by the things he does on his sprees. Coming to his senses, he's revolted at certain episodes he vaguely remembers. These memories are a nightmare. Now, I'm gonna take you back here. Oh, don't think she has a year yet. I'm talking about your grand sponsee, Stephanie. She's my great grand sponsee. So her name's Jessica, and she's in my home group. And she came in not even a year ago. And the first day, you know, I met her at the home group, and she is devastated. She's crying. And it's a big book study. Her first day was a Wednesday. And at my home group, it's a Wednesday. And this really drove home to me about how this step is not something that I can relate to today. And I shouldn't be doing that in a meeting. And I really drove it home. So this woman who had no idea what had happened and why she woke up to her car being totally totaled and doesn't remember what happened and had to sit up for all night long watching the news to figure out if maybe she hurt somebody, had her car hidden in the driveway under a car, like under tarps and stuff, because she didn't want the cops to, like, she had no idea what happened. She had no idea. She woke up and had no idea why her car was totaled. And she's just revolting at the idea, like shudders to think about what could have happened, right? And we're reading this paragraph. This is the paragraph we start on the Big Book study, her very first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. This is the paragraph. She comes in, she sits down, and we read this paragraph, and she can identify, right? So let's read this again, thinking about that. So she's, it says, the inconsistency is made worse by the things he does on his sprees. Coming to his senses, he's revolted at certain episodes he vaguely remembers. These memories are a nightmare. He trembles to think someone might have observed him. As fast as he can, he pushes those memories far inside himself. He hopes that they will never see the light of day. He's under constant fear and tension. That makes for more drinking. This is about drinking. This is getting over our drinking. And then when everybody in the room starts sharing about, oh yeah, the other day, you know, I had an emotional hangover, and so I needed to do a fifth step with my spouse. No, that's a 10th step. Like, this is about, don't sit there and compare your, I don't know, like not using the proper language with your daughter's kindergarten teacher and feeling bad about that the next day with an episode he vaguely remembers, with totaling your car or running into a bank, or, you know, these things that these new people come in and they are in this situation, and we're going to downplay it so that we can relate today. That's what the 10th step is for, right? This step is to get over our drinking. Psychologists are inclined to agree with us. We have spent thousands of dollars for examinations. We know but few instances where we have given the doctors a fair break. We have seldom told them the whole truth, nor have we followed their advice. Unwilling to be honest with these sympathetic men, we were honest with no one else. Small wonder why many of the medical profession have a low opinion of alcoholics and their chance for recovery, which I think is hilarious and so true. We must be entirely honest with somebody if we are to expect to live long and happy in this world. Rightly and naturally, we think well before we choose the person or persons with whom we take this intimate and confidential step. Those of us belonging to religious denominations which require confession must, and of course, will want to go to the properly appointed authorities whose duty it is to receive it. I think they're talking about confession, or if you're Catholic or whatnot. I'm not, so I don't know a whole bunch about that. Though we have no religious connection, we may still do well to talk with somebody ordained by an established religion. We find such a person quick to see and understand our problems. Of course, we sometimes encounter people who do not understand alcoholics. You know, I like that they're calling the next paragraph. I'm not going to read through this whole thing because of the, I got to respect the time here. But this next paragraph, it says to use a closed mouth, understanding friend. I think that's the first time that a sponsor is mentioned, because what is a sponsor, right? Now, we didn't use the word sponsor for 2 years after this book was published, but that's what they're talking about here. A closed mouth, understanding friend. So somebody who you can trust and somebody who understands what you're going through because they've been through it too, right? That magic of me too. That's the understanding part in there. So I really like the last line in that paragraph. It says, the rule is we must be hard on ourselves, but always considerate of others. So I thought that AA was going to teach me about self-care and self-forgiveness.
And I was wrong. I got that wrong. I realized that the way I forgive myself, the way I gain self-esteem is to do esteemable things, is to do for others. Like the more I give away, that's how this whole thing works. It's the constant thought of others and how I may best meet their needs is how I gain anything from this thing. So the rule is we must be hard on ourselves, but always considerate of others. Page 75. I just have to read the fifth step promises because they're beautiful. So we pocket our pride and go into it, illuminating every twist of character, every dark cranny of the past. Once we've taken this step, withholding nothing, we are delighted. We can look the world in the eye. We can be alone at perfect peace and ease. Our fears fall from us. We begin to feel the nearness of our Creator. We may have had certain spiritual beliefs, but now we begin to have a spiritual experience. Oh, goosebumps! The feeling that the drink problem has disappeared will often come strongly. We feel we are on the broad highway walking hand in hand with the spirit of the universe. That is not a step to take lightly. That is not a step to downplay and say, oh, yeah, I do all 12 steps every day. No, this was a big deal, and the results were amazing. They are amazing. So returning home, so this is where, so on page 75, this is where for me, we stop reading. When we meet up, right? So last week I said when we get off our knees from saying the third step prayer, we set up a time and a place to meet in 2 weeks from then, right? And then you got 2 weeks to write your fourth step, and now we're on our fifth step. And when we first come together after you have your fourth step, and we're sitting down to do that fifth step, and we've set aside a big chunk of time, right? And however long that is scheduled for is up to between you and the person that you're working with. And then, so what I do is we pray in, and then we read all of this chapter up until here. And this is where we cut. We stop, and this is where they begin to read to me their fourth step. And that's what doing a fifth step is, right? And then as soon as they're done reading through their fourth step, as soon as we get done with that portion of it, we go back to the book to finish this fifth step. And it says returning home. So now, if you come over to my house, like I'm looking around the room and a couple of you guys have done your sixth and seventh step in my bedroom, right? And it's funny because my daughter grew up with me doing fifth steps at the house and then sending you into my bedroom to do your seventh step. And we'd close the door, and every time she came home from school and she'd see the door shut, she'd like, do you have a seventh step in there? And it was cute because I would try to do this work while she was at school, right? And it's awesome. And so now it's like if you want to go back to your house or wherever you can be quiet, right? Wherever you can have quiet peace of mind and spend time with just you and God, that's what returning home is, right? So you return home after reading this fifth step to someone that you can trust, to your trusted friend, to your understanding closed mouth friend, and then returning home, we find a place where we can be quiet for an hour. It gives a specific time amount, right? Give specific time on how long step six and seven should take. 1 hour. That's all. And I'm going to be perfectly honest. I lasted 45 minutes. I have ADHD and a bunch of other outside issues. I lasted 45 minutes. I always feel like a hypocrite when I say, look it, 1 hour, it says it, black and white. But I lasted 45 minutes. It seems to be have been sufficient. Anyways, it tells me 1 hour, carefully reviewing what we've done. So that's what we're supposed to do in this 1 hour, right? So we thank God from the bottom of our heart that we know him better. Taking this book down from our shelf, or opening it up, we turn to the page which contains the 12 steps. So that's page 58. So let's go, or 59. Let's go back to page 59 and look at those 12 steps, right? So there they are. So we're going to turn back to page 75 again. We're going to be going back and forth. Taking this book down for carefully reading the first five proposals, we ask if we've omitted anything. So the first five proposals, I'm asking myself and God, I'm reading them, and I'm not reading them in the we. The only reason that they're written in the we is not because it's a we program, right? It's a we fellowship for sure, but it's an I program. And the reason why they're written in the we is because more than one person is the author of this. More than one person's experience. And because we speak the language, English language, we use a plural when we're referring to more than one person's experience. So now I turn them into the I, because this is an I program, we fellowship, I program. So I say to myself, have I admitted I was powerless over alcohol and that my life has become unmanageable? Like, I don't have to admit that your life and all of our lives have begun. That's not, I have to admit my life has become unmanageable. Yes, I've done that. So now I ask myself the second question. Have I come to believe that a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity? Yes. So I'm giving these, what is meditation? Thoughtful contemplation, right? So I'm giving these questions thoughtful contemplation. Made a decision. Have I made a decision to turn my will and my life over to the care of God as I understand him? If I can answer that, I move on to the next. Did I make a searching and fearless moral inventory of myself? Have I admitted to God, to ourselves? Like, I don't have to take our inventory, right? It's not a we program. It's an I program. We fellowship, I program. So then admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being, the exact nature of my wrongs. Yes, I think I did the best I could with what I have right now. So then I get to flip back to page 75 and it says, so carefully reading the first five proposals, we ask if we have omitted anything, for we are building an arch through which we shall walk a free man at last. Is our work solid so far? Are the stones properly in place? Have we skimped on the cement put into our foundation? Have we tried to make mortar without sand? And I'm going to stop there because of the time. And next week we'll get right into 6 and 7, because that's still done in that hour. And I hate to break it up. I don't usually break up 5, 6, and 7, but I used up the time. So back to you guys.
All audio and video files on the District6AA.org website or the District 6 in Area 15 YouTube channel are for personal use only. Reproduction, distribution, and commercial use are not permitted. In accordance with District 6 current practice, no faces are shown in our videos and audio is scrubbed for anonymity prior to publishing. Contributors whose voices are heard have given record and release consent. Opinions expressed by the presenter are their own and do not necessarily represent the group conscience of District 6 as a whole.